the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
What a week we have to review in the week trending. So much has happened politically, both sides of the Atlantic. I'm going to start in America, even though, well, it's not home, obviously, but what happens over there is entirely relevant to us, particularly all of the executive orders been signed by Donald Trump during the week and the various statements he's been making about economic issues could be enormously impactful on what happens to Ireland's economy and the money that's available to our government to spend on various things. So we'll start in America, but I think we'll start with one of the more remarkable claims that Donald Trump made in his inauguration speech, in which he said he'd been saved by God.
Those who wish to stop our cause have tried to take my freedom and indeed to take my life. Just a few months ago, in a beautiful Pennsylvania field, an assassin's bullet ripped through my ear. But I felt then, and believe even more so now, that my life was saved for a reason. I was saved by God to make America great again.
Saved by God to make America great again. Larry Donnelly, how does that sort of thing play with the American people?
Well, very differently, Matt, to how it plays to an audience in this part of the world, which obviously looks at that and doesn't know whether to laugh or cry. I suspect that it plays one of three ways. First of all, you have a cadre of people who despise Donald Trump, who will look at that and say, my God, I cannot believe where we are. They will never be converted to Donald Trump's cause. Then you drill down into the Trump voters, the people who put him over the top. And for a decent-sized swathe of them, who tend to be very religious, many of whom are evangelical Christians, they fervently believe in this stuff. But for a bigger swathe, I would suspect, of the Trump voters, they would get a bit of a chuckle out of this and say, look, this is Trump once again putting it up to the other side. And they'd say, we're delighted with him. Again, he's a showman as much as anything else. He is not a politician. He is somebody who's going to come in and change things radically. And that's what we voted for. And I think that's all part of this sort of soup that Donald Trump has put together, which, whether you like him or not, has led to this extraordinary political comeback and has him once again at the top of the world and with a swagger that we certainly didn't see in 2017, but we are seeing right now.
Rob McDermott, I'm very conscious of the fact that our Doyle sessions every day open with a prayer, and that the state-funded public broadcaster on both radio and television has the Angelus at 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock each day. But what did you make of the amount of time given in the inauguration ceremony to prayer and to the various other ceremonies afterwards, given that there must be a significant portion of the American population who do not believe in any God and who might want to be represented in a secular fashion?
Yeah, and I absolutely understand that concern. And I actually think what has been felt so ridiculous and disingenuous to me about the Trump presidency is that he pretends to be a Christian. And I'm going to say, and this is clearly, obviously, my opinion, I do not think he has ever expressed any religious beliefs before taking the presidency. He's been asked himself his favorite sermon, his favorite piece of the Bible. He has not been able to provide a single quote. But I think what was so telling about the inauguration was, of course, the brilliant speech by the bishop, Marianne Budd, and the reaction to her, because she
this was at a prayer service after the inauguration.
After the inauguration, but was attended by Trump, his family, JP Vance, and she gave this incredible speech where she was basically calling for mercy and kindness and the safety of LGBTQ people, the safety of immigrants, particularly those fleeing war and persecution.
Sorry, Ro, I was going to stop you a second because we can actually play it. I think it's worth hearing.
Let me make one final plea, Mr. President. In the name of our God, I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now. There are gay, lesbian, and transgender children in Democratic, Republican, and independent families, some who fear for their lives. And the people who pick our crops and clean our office buildings, who labor in poultry farms and meatpacking plants, who wash the dishes after we eat in restaurants and work the night shifts in hospitals, they may not be citizens or have the proper documentation. But the vast majority of immigrants are not criminals. They pay taxes and are good neighbors. I ask you to have mercy, Mr. President, on those in our communities whose children fear that their parents will be taken away, and that you help those who are fleeing war zones and persecution in their own lands to find compassion and welcome here. Our God teaches us that we are to be merciful to the stranger.
Okay, Ro, so what did you make of that?
Really remarkable. And I myself am not a religious person, and I sometimes get a little bit annoyed at the way religion is brought into things in Ireland, and then particularly estates. But I thought what was so remarkable, this moment gave me a bit of a Fleabag moment where I was like, oh my God, I fancy a bishop. But Bud's call was for goodness and mercy, and the reactions to this have been wild. Trump spoke out again, it called her a nasty woman, which is of course a phrase he uses against any woman who says anything that challenges him.
Man as well, role, in fairness. Nasty is his favourite pejorative.
That is fair. But Sean Hannity described the sermon as a disgraceful prayer full of fear-mongering and division, when of course it's the exact opposite. Lawrence Jones of Fox and Friends called Bud a radical leftist. Matt Walsh declared that hell exists for people like Marion and called her exhibit A for why women should not be pastors, priests or bishops. And Republican Mike Collins, who's from Georgia, said that Bud should be added to the deportation list. First of all, the fact that Republicans continuously weaponize religion for control, to control the bodies of women, to control LGBTQ people, but then refute these messages of grace and mercy and love, which from my understanding of Christianity are fairly basic ideas of what being a Christian is, it's showing that they do not care about religion, and they're showing that they care about control, and they only want to weaponize religion for control. And I also think the response to Bishop Bud was so important because it's a preview of how the new administration and its media allies plan to handle dissent.
Okay, Larry, how brave was she to make a speech or a sermon, deliver a sermon like that? And those who came out and opposed it, including Trump with his vitriolic statement, are they the real snowflakes when it comes to all these people who say, oh, we're all for free speech, we want to be able to say what we want to say, and the minute they hear something they don't like, they get so offended?
Well, Matt, I think two things are true in this instance. One is that it's kind of extraordinary how at one level America is a hyper-secular state, but at the same time, it is also a state in which religion is infused to every bit of public observance. The second thing I would say is that Christianity is sort of complicated when it comes to politics. I absolutely endorse everything that bishop said. I think she deserves a Profile in Courage Award. I agree with every iota of what she said. And to speak truth to power in front of a president about to be just inaugurated president and vice president, I think is extraordinary. So I absolutely salute her on that front. But when I say that Christianity doesn't wrap neatly around politics, there is another side to this. And for an awful lot of Americans, including Catholic Americans, of which I am one, they would take a somewhat different view. And they would say that, look, yes, perhaps the faith or Christianity doesn't fit nicely with J.D. Vance and Donald Trump, given the things they believe. On the other hand, however, and this was a huge factor in the election, whether people on the left like it or not, an awful lot of Catholics, and Donald Trump, for instance, won the Catholic vote by a huge margin. He won the evangelical vote by an even bigger margin. It came down to the fact that from their point of view, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance stand up for the sanctity of the unborn human life. And that's why religion doesn't neatly fit politics. And that's why one can say that, look, this bishop did the right thing. She said everything absolutely correctly. But when it comes down to faith and when it comes down to the intermeddling of faith and politics, it's kind of a mixed message and kind of has a mixed impact.
Of course, one of the other things which caused enormous controversy this week was Elon Musk's behavior on the stage at the Capital One Arena on Monday, when, as well as saying civilization has been saved by the fact that Donald Trump has become president, he performed a gesture, well, did it twice, which many watching and many considering the people that he has been supporting in recent times, such as the AfD party in Germany, which are a far-right party, criminals like Stephen Yaxley-Lennon, who goes by the performance name of Tommy Robinson and who is in prison at present, when he supports the likes of those, it gives rise to people thinking that when he made the type of gesture, which I think everyone at this stage has probably seen, particularly if you've watched it in video, to wonder if he's supporting Nazism. Let's just hear it, and if you haven't, you can just imagine what happened.
My heart goes out to you. It is thanks to you that the future of civilization is assured.
Okay, my heart goes out to you. Except, Ro, there are also previous videos of him where he makes the sign of a heart and moves it out towards the crowd. But he doesn't actually make the sign of the heart on this performance on Monday. He thumps his chest and gives a stiff arm salute. And given all the things that I've said about him and his efforts to involve himself in politics around the world, aren't people entitled to say, well, that looks like a Nazi salute?
Yeah, and I also think the people defending him were also not defending, for example, Colin Kaepernick, who took a knee and saying, well, that's just a gesture. Of course, gestures mean things. And of course, gestures have the weight of political and historical context and meaning behind them. And he has also not denied that it was a Nazi salute. Surely, if you had inadvertently done a gesture and it was being equated with Nazism, you would immediately move to distance yourself from it. And he hasn't. And so I don't think there's a debate over its intentionality, whether he performed a salute to troll liberals or because Elon Musk is in fact a Nazi. That is a distinction only he is making, and frankly I don't think it's a very important distinction. And I think his response to criticism has been incredibly telling. And the Anti-Defamation League, who I would have some issues with, but they came out in defense of him and said, this is a delicate moment, it's a new day, so many people are on edge, our politics are inflamed, and social media only adds the anxiety. It seems that Elon Musk made an awkward gesture in a moment of enthusiasm, not a Nazi salute, but again, we appreciate that people are on it. And Elon Musk thanked them. He then immediately tweeted a bunch of jokes about Nazism. He tweeted saying, don't say Hess to Nazi accusations. Stop goring your enemy. Some people will Goebbels down anything. His pronouns would have been he Himmler. Bet you did Nazi that coming. If your response to being accused of making a Nazi salute is to immediately, on the social media platform you have bought that is available to millions and billions of people around the world, is to immediately make a huge amount of Nazi jokes, you are basically dog whistling and not very subtly about your beliefs or what you are willing to allow.
Okay.
And people who support him are also willing to allow this rhetoric.
Larry, what do you think?
Frankly, I'm not 100% sure what to think. I mean, when I looked at it, I'm deeply, deeply disturbed. And when I know what he thinks and the things that he has said about, Tommy Robinson or whatever his name is, I'm deeply disturbed at this level. And I wonder what is behind it. I also have heard some of his defenders, he hasn't said this himself, but some of his defenders point to his having Asperger's syndrome and that perhaps being a fact in some of his, what I would see as very strange behavior when he gets on stage. And otherwise, what I would say from a realpolitik point of view is that this is obviously not what Donald Trump needed. It's the last thing he needed. And while there is some sort of mutual admiration society between Donald Trump and Mr. Musk, If this, the perception continues to grow that Musk is actually calling the shots here, and or if Musk continues to embarrass him, I don't think Donald Trump will stand for that very much longer. So the relationship between Musk and Trump is going to be yet another fascinating element of this presidency as we watch it unfold.
Well, actually, I'm just going to jump away from American politics just for a second, because, Larry, I'll stay with you to start this. I was fascinated by the speech made by Spain's Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez at Davos on Wednesday, in which he accused the tech billionaires who lined up to pay tribute to Trump on Monday. He said they should be held responsible for poisoning society and eroding democracy with their algorithms. He said that he wanted world leaders to take up the fight of returning digital platforms to their original purpose of being a safe place for conversation rather than being the tools of our own oppression. What do you make of that, Larry?
I think it's another gutsy speech. I think it's another gutsy affirmation of where the truth is and where the truth lies. And I think it comes in important context. I mean, who would have thunk that at a presidential inauguration, again, a president who says he's there to fight for people who've been left behind, that he would be surrounded by billionaires? And let's face it, these billionaires are cozying up to Trump for a myriad of reasons, among them to make more money, among them to avoid persecution or prosecution from a president who turns on them. But I think there's something else at play here as well. And that is what I would perceive to be a showdown between the United States and the European Union when it comes to the regulation of social media platforms. There is a very different view taken at all sorts of levels, whether it be the accumulation of wealth, whether it be the limits of the right to freedom of speech or freedom of expression. There is a broad transatlantic difference in those. And what I would see emanating very soon from the European Union is an effort to regulate some of these tech companies. And what I would see emanating from the United States, especially if they continue to flatter Donald Trump, would be a robust pushback on all of that, citing the First Amendment, which is very absolutist. So we'll see how that plays out.
I'm going to play it for you, Roe McDermott. You might talk to us about this. Something that happened to the BBC broadcaster Katrina Perry, once of this station and once of RTE, when she was interviewing one of Trump's entourage, Kid Rock, live on television this week.
What about you? What are you doing? Where are you at?
Well, I'm standing on a rooftop in these very, very chilly conditions. I will be on air for 11 or 12 hours, so I don't think I'll have anywhere near as fun a day as you have planned for yourself there. That sounds like you got the better deal here indeed.
I mean, I can't see you right now, so I don't know what you look like.
Well, I look like I'm ready to hit the slopes, I can tell you. I'm in full-on ski gear here with my hat, gloves, the whole thing, ready to rock, because you got to be wrapped up against the elements, don't you?
I love to go skiing. I love to go skiing. You sound sexy. You want to go with me?
Well, we won't get into that right here. So we're doing no skiing today. We've got a day of broadcasting to do. But Kid Rock, thank you so much for joining us here on BBC News. Enjoy your day.
What'd you make of that, Ron McDermott?
I mean, I'm not going to pretend that my respect levels for Kid Rock were incredibly high anyway, after becoming kind of the unofficial musical mascot of the MAGA movement. But I think Katrina Perry is so brilliant. She's always been brilliant since she was on 6 o'clock news, then departing for the Washington, D.C. Bureau. And I think this is just a prime example of the way women in all kinds of positions, but particularly media, just get objectified and have to put up with this. And as we can tell from that clip, Katrina was trying to play this off with professionalism and also friendliness, and keeping it kind of neutral and talking about, oh, I'm going to hit the slopes. And again, just this sexualized reaction from Kid Rock to a woman who's trying to do her job and cover politics. And this is often treated as a bit of fun. And I think Kid Rock has this reputation of like, oh, I'm just fun and it's happy-go-lucky and it's a good time. But women are constantly told to react to misogyny and sexist jokes and being objectified and being treated as sexual objects while they're professional, and to just laugh at it and take it as a joke. joke. And this is the definition of sexual harassment. And I just have so much respect for her. And I just hate that she was put into that position. And am I surprised that it was by somebody who's a huge supporter of Trump? No, because as we know, misogyny has just been at the core of his behavior personally in his personal life. The fact that he has been found in court to have sexually assaulted people, that he bragged about assaulting women on tape. So the fact that he's surrounding himself with people who will happily objectify professional women covering the media is sadly not a surprise. But I think Katrina Perry is brilliant, and everybody in the country, I think, is behind her.
And in relation to Trump, I think it is significant that the most prominent Irish person to be invited to his inauguration was Conor McGregor. Let's move on, Larry Donnelly, and what happened back here in Ireland this week. We've had debate on it during the week here in the programme, but what was your take on the scenes on Wednesday when there was a failure to elect Taoiseach Micheál Martin, something that was delayed until Thursday? A very legitimate concern on the part of the opposition in relation to how could it be that a group who were supporting the government and had received junior ministries wanted to have representation on the opposition benches. But even leaving that as a very significant issue, did it justify what happened in the chamber on Wednesday?
In my view, no, it didn't. Look, I think that the very legitimate concern of the opposition, which I think is shared by just about everybody here in terms of this small grouping trying to have it every which way. And of course, there are manifest doubts out there about Michael Lowry and his role in all of this. I think everyone didn't get this. It didn't add up that people could at one stage be affiliated to the government but yet have speaking rights in the opposition. And that was appalling. There are ways of doing it, however, and I think that on the day, I don't think it was a good day for Irish politics. What is supposed to be a day, look, where a new government, whether you oppose or whether you're for, where they're supposed to take hold. And I think the scenes in Dáil Éireann were really, really discouraging. I don't think they were edifying at any level. And I think that perhaps the opposition may have turned in what could have been a positive, what could have been something that they could have continually used against the government. I'd say that the average observer might have come away with that, with saying a plague on all your houses. We just don't like these scenes. And nobody comes away from this any the better, I'm afraid.
Finally, Roe McDermott, our government was announced yesterday. The 15 members of cabinet, there are three women, and then there are two super juniors who are women, one from Fianna Fáil, one from Fine Gael. The regional independents have two men as their super juniors. What are we to make of that? I mean, is this just logical when you consider that, for example, Fianna Fáil just has seven female TDs? Should there have been more women represented in the cabinet, or is it simply a case of the best people who are available, irrespective of gender?
No, it's not. It's not that the best people available, irrespective of gender, have gone, that this is systemic gender inequality. There are three women, three senior ministers who are women. There are also three men who are called James who are senior ministers. There are three men. There are three people with O names, like O'Donovan, who are senior ministers. That is a sign of how pathetic our gender equality is. And this is a fact that has been acknowledged worldwide. In terms of our parliament, we have a parliament with the lowest proportion of female parliamentarians in Western Europe.
Because that's what our electorate decided upon. They were given 40% of the candidates were women for all of the main parties to get funding, and yet they decided to elect only 27% of the Dáil as women.
But it's about access to local politics, about support in local politics. It's about whose name gets out there. It's about your opportunities to connect with the voting public, which come from opportunities that have historically always been given to men in politics. And if you get into politics, you're obviously more able to take other jobs in politics. So it's the barriers to entry for women. And this is a systemic issue. And this isn't just about prioritizing equal representation for a box-ticking exercise. It is essential to have women, an equal representation of women, proportionate to them being half the population, to create fair policies. It's not about optics. It's about clearing the barriers so women feel comfortable and feel supportive entering politics at the ground level and through, so that they can bring their unique perspectives, their experiences, their insights for shaping inclusive governance And again, it's because half of the population are women, we need to be represented. These are systemic issues that Ireland has been called upon to fix for years now, and they're just simply not doing enough.
Thank you very much, Roe McDermott and Larry Donnelly, for being with us for the week trending.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.